Take it away.
Yep. Okay, so my name is Guillaume, as he says, and I'm living in Vancouver for the moment, but I'm on the road. I was going to see my parents for Christmas, then I was just like, oh, I should organize a bunch of conferences on the way, and it ended up being like a tour of 12 conferences all across. I've been on the road for like 15 days, so if I'm grouchy and just like a bit, like, it's because that I've been on the road too much, but it should be okay. Like, just throw me objects and I'm gonna wake up and just start to talk, you know, about the right thing again. Yeah, so there's t-shirt for sale for the Olympics Resistance Network just there. There's a bunch of propaganda that has been made in Vancouver for you. Basically, like, the anti-Olympic convergence is going to be happening on the 10th to the 15th of February. There's other information related to the Olympics. There's a donation jar, a donation guitar case, in fact, that is just there if you want to chip in money for traveling expense and shit. That would be appreciated. What's next? Yeah, this is recorded. If you don't, you know, like, also, there has been police harassment a lot around the Olympics, so I would advise that whatever you say here would be the same thing that you would say in a courtroom. So, you know, expect that what you're saying in here is going to be, like, used against you in court, like, if you're doing anything illegal. But you're not going to do anything illegal, so everything is cool. So, yeah. So, I think that's all for, like, the poutine of, like, the legal information and stuff, so I'll start right away. So, I'm doing this talk, like, because I'm following the torch around, so I'm doing this talk just to, like, introduce the people to what is going on with the Olympics in the city. So, it's a really, I start from the beginning, you know, like, from what are the Olympics, where that came from, how it is organized and everything, and I'm just going more into the details, and I'm just trying to give a bunch of details. I usually talk for somewhere between an hour and 30 minutes, so it can be long, but it's not so bad. Afterward, there's a break. I hate to charge people for information, so after my talk, there's going to be a part where I play music. It's going to be bad, but, you know, I just want to charge people for entertainment instead of asking them money for information, because information should be free. I'm from the free software movement when I started to organize. Anyway, so that's it. That's it for all the details and of how it's gonna go. So the total event should go on for like at least 2 hours or something. I'm gonna need a cigarette somewhere and I'm gonna be asking you one because I don't have any anymore. So the problem with the Olympics is that everybody's seen them on TV. So, like, everybody just says, oh, what are the Olympics about? And they're just like, oh, it's the spirit of love. It's the interrelationship between all the nations. And it's all those pretty things. But the thing is that it's really hard to understand the consequences that the Olympics have on the city. Because, like, what you see on TV is just a bit of resistance there. It's just a little thing. But you don't understand, like, all the consequences that it has in the long term on the city. So, just to introduce you to what are the Olympics, I'm just going to make a brief history from 2003 of what are the Olympics. So in 2003, there were the creation of the Beard Corporation. The Beard Corporation is a corporation that it got for a goal to create, to propose a city for the Olympics. So what it does, like, the IOC requires a bunch of guarantees that need to be covered for the bid to be read and accepted as a valid bid. The first guarantee that is really interesting to look at is the shortfall guarantee. So if, you know, there is like all those speculation about a local organizing committee, which is called VANOC, which is the Vancouver Olympic Organizing Committee. So like at the stage, it's just a proposed committee. So like you got VANOC, you know, have to have a guarantee from any government institutions. And if it make a deficit at any moment, there should be a government that cover its ass and basically pay any debt that the corporation, that the Vancouver Olympic Committee is creating. So this is the first guarantee that is asked. The second guarantee, and this is a guarantee that causes a lot of problems because as the Olympics go more and more and more and more and more expensive, it gets more and more the government has to give money to the VANOC, so it just like put together the infrastructure so everything goes well. So because of that, the government has been cutting in the last 7 years. The government of BC has been cutting in healthcare. They've been cutting in education. They've been cutting in childcare. They've been cutting everywhere just because the VANOC was not doing great. But VANOC has been created with a shortfall guarantee. So when they created this organization, they were knowing that it's going to go, you know, that it was having a guaranteed of shortfall. So they weren't caring that much about, like, losing money and going, you know, in deficit years after years. So that's one of the guarantees. Another guarantee that is signed 7 years another guarantee that has been signed in 2003 is like the Olympic coins. There should be like Olympic coins so everybody got in their pockets like propaganda for the Olympics. It's way better than leafletting, in my humble opinion. They also have like all the advertising space in Vancouver like has been reserved in 2003 by the Bit Corporation. It has been requested that all the advertising space, because there's going to be a lot of tourists in Vancouver, all the advertising space is for the IOC, which means that it's going to be a humongous attraction, you know, an attraction park in downtown Vancouver where all the advertising is going to be covered by the IOC. So you see how transformative for a city that this can be. It also guarantees that there should be no events or protests during the game. So they already signed in 2003, the government of Canada just accorded like the IOC the right to just prevent every demonstration. So it's already accepted. And there's a lot of other details in there that is really interesting to note. For example, Canada has agreed to ensure the security for all the Olympics game and related events. So we don't know how much money they're going to spend on security. We know that they agreed to spend $900 million on security already. But as there is demonstration going on in different cities, it's all covered by the Canadian government. And we're going to have the numbers far later on. Like when it's going to be like 3 years ago, we're going to know like the real amount of security. We're going to know how much informants they were on the ground. But for the moment, we have no ideas. So it's wanting. And it's the Canadian government that's covering that, you know? So we just like, it's not the organizing committee at all. And also, like another detail that's really interesting to point out is that the infrastructures are built jointly by the government of BC and the government of Canada. And those two together are putting the infrastructure in place while VANOC is selling the tickets. So the stacks to watch the sport are going to be humongous because VANOC decided that there should be humongous stacks to watch the events because they're the ones selling the tickets and making the money out of it. And it's the government of BC and Canada that are paying for the stacks. So they'd rather have empty seats than not enough seats. Another guarantee that is really interesting to look is, first off, in Vancouver in 2003, there were 22,000 hotel rooms. So what happened, the IOC requires that there's a bunch of hotel rooms that are reserved for the IOC personnel, for the sponsor people, for the administrators of the game, for all those people that are coming just for the game. And the IOC requires that there's 21,500 rooms that are reserved for the Olympic personnel, which is 95% of the 22,000 hotel rooms that there is in Vancouver and Whistler. And the tourists are not coming yet, you know? It's like, there's no tourists yet, but all the hotel rooms are booked, you know? And it just starts like this. It's the first thing. But hold on, it's not everything. Like, they're just bringing all those people, which is the equivalent of a small town. And that does not include the security personnel. The latest number that we have for the security personnel that they will be in Vancouver is a total of 16,500 people. So it's going to be the equivalent of the population of a small town that's all going to come downtown Vancouver, you know, on top of everybody else. So it's already, like, looking bad. But the thing is that they have to move those people around because they created 15 venues for all the different sports all over the city in Vancouver and Whistler. To carry those people around, they have put together what they call Olympic lanes, which are lanes in the city that are reserved for Olympic transport. So you can't go there if you're not an Olympic athlete or an Olympic administrator or a member of the IOC, or if you're... So there's going to be a bunch of lanes in the city that are going to be only for Olympic transportation. And this includes most of the major roads in Vancouver. And that's not including a bunch of other streets where there is like a complete interdiction of parking, just to be sure that there's like more lanes for the public. And it's not including other things. There's other details about that, but I'm not going to go into all the details. But all in all, the Vancouver city plan just ensured that everything will be cool, like if the local population reduces transportation usage by 30%, which means that basically, like, Because a lot of the transportation in the city needs to be done. Like, for example, bread needs to go to grocery stores every day, you know? So this transportation, which is local transportation, is not going to reduce. So the percentage that need to be reduced by the population of Vancouver is about 60% or something. So like, it just, the plan says that everything will go cool if the local inhabitant of Vancouver stop using transportation means by 60%. So it's pretty realistic. I'm pretty stoked to see how it goes. And that's not taking into account the most awesome thing, because they promised us airport-style security for all the venues, because the Canadian government is organizing the security, and the sponsors are the ones that are allowed to sell pop and hot dogs inside the venues. So the more complicated it is to get in and out, the more they sell pop inside. So the government's paying. Hey, what the fuck? You know, we'd rather use it. So they promised us airport-style security. And the city of Vancouver, because they were like, the security was getting out of control because there were protests and stuff in Vancouver, because they were organizing that in such a bad way that, you know, people had to react. So basically, because the security got higher, they just passed a bylaw that allowed them to use all the street adjacent to the Olympic venues as place to set up Olympic-style, airport-style security. So it means like metal detector to get inside the venues. It means the guy with the machine that just says that your pants are weird and why did you get zippers there. And, you know, you're going to have all that stuff for free with a ticket. It's going to be awesome. But it's really... and that's just the beginning of the infrastructures, because they haven't built anything yet. They just promised, you know, that all the transportation is going to be taken care of. And we're just going to go inside now the infrastructures that they're building for a game. So the first thing that we have to know, the first thing that is really important to see is that when there were the bid committee was together and just putting a bid for the Olympics game, the first thing that they did is just like, they just compared different bids. And there were the bid of Salzburg. Salzburg was a city in Austria that was, that has, you know, less environmental impact according to the IOC. They had less transportation to overhaul for the games. They had more sport infrastructure already in place in Salzburg. And even though, like, the criteria include that there is a referendum that is passed, you know, for to know if the population is down with the Olympics, it's full of false promises. But the thing is that, like, in Salzburg, they had 68% support for the games, while in Vancouver, they had 61%. So the referendum has been there. The population of Vancouver doesn't want that much the games. But, you know, they're still going to Vancouver. Because of what? Because they promised more security, and they promised that the security, they promised that the security will be underneath Vanok. And it's funny, I'm going to pass the card of this motherfucking pig that just harassed me. Sorry. I'm going to pass you the card of the Olympic pig that just come to arrest me. I was outside in Hamilton. And as you can see, there's the logo of Vanok, the Vancouver Organizing Committee, just beside the name of the RCMP pig. Which just means that now the RCMPs are listening to the orders of Vanok. It's as clear as that. And that's the kind of promises that got... this is the kind of promises that made Vancouver a better place for the Olympics to be. So it's really bad, in my humble opinion. So when they're saying that they're making the greenest game, like, they're just saying that they don't care about building more infrastructures, they don't care about building more... more roads for the games, as long as the government is willing to put its police services underneath, you know, underneath the hand of Vanna, which is just a corporation that is just supposed to make the games happen. So, yeah. So that's the big thing. Like, it's gonna be green, but, you know, like, we don't care about if there's more infrastructure already built. So, they just said to the government, let's build it, because that's how it goes. So I'm just going to go through a bunch of construction that they've made for the game. So first off, I'm just going through a bunch of examples. Like, that's not everything. For the moment, we have the data that are available. Like, we just know that everything is crooked up and everything is weird and everything is messed up. But we don't have all the data. Like, in 5 years, we're going to know, like, that the, you know, this luge thing has just, like, was built on, like... yeah, it was built on something that shouldn't be built on, and it's just going to fall apart. We don't know. But for the moment, like, there's a bunch of examples that are really interesting. First off, there is the when the bid was passed, when the bid committee just got agreed on their bid, they just said, oh, the transportation is slow between the Vancouver airport and the downtown of Vancouver. So they were just like, oh, the tourists are now taking 45 minutes to get downtown from the airport, which should be a big deal, but it, in my humble opinion, it is not. So the government of Canada and the government of BC just went together and just said, oh, what could we do? And there were this old project that was proposed by the Ministry of Transportation of BC that has been ditched because it was not profitable at all, of adding a SkyTrain line that goes to the airport. So they just study it back and they just put it back on the table and just like they hire a new consultant to tell them, oh, it's going to be okay, don't worry, it's going to be cool. Give us a ton of money and it's going to be cool. Like, we're going to sign you a paper that says that it's going to be cool. So what happened is that they just created a humongous public-private partnership between the government of Canada and the government of BC, and they just create a corporation for to build that, to ensure that there is no cost overrun, because it's always something stressful for government to manage cost overrun. And the thing is that they just said, oh, the private partner is going to ensure the risk. But what happened with public-private partnership is that the corporation got no other jobs to do than doing this construction project. So what they did is just like, we're going to go bankrupt if you don't give us 20 more percent of the building cost, because we're going to go bankrupt. And so the private partner just finally ended up like with a lot more money so to build the SkyTrain line. And after it's been built, what they just realized was that, oh, there's not as much attendance as the consultant told us. You know, the consultant that we bribed, you know, just a couple of months ago, like, to tell us that there would be enough people and everything will be profitable, and now there's not enough. So, like, they just told us 1 month afterward, they just told us, we're going to have to increase the fare. It's going to cost 50% more in the next 2 months to go to use the transit line. So 3 months after they opened the new transit line, it got a fare increase of 50%. But it's not all. Like, they just started to know, like, and realize that the long-term consequences in attendance. And they're just, now the analysts are just saying to us that it's going to go in deficit of somewhere between 20 million and 50 million every year until 2025. So what the IOC just got to do is, like, investing $1.6 billion of public money, it's a good reason to cry, into a project that's going to be in deficit, you know, of somewhere between 20 and 50 million every year till 2025. So it's a massive waste of money just to get tourists faster downtown. I don't think it's worth it. Okay, but it's not all. Like, it's just like one project for the Olympics. So the second thing that I want to point out is the Sea to Sky Highway. The Sea to Sky Highway is an highway that connects Whistler and Vancouver. And the way it was before, it was a two-lane highway that was just like on the side of a cliff. So they had to bump a lot to be able to pass two more lanes there. But it's an highway that got a long history of being, you know, washed down in mudslides. It's just like what happened like 5 times before, like it's just like being washed down in mudslides. And because they had to bump so much, like the on the side of the cliff, which was just like the habitat of an endangered species frog, you know, because they had to bump so much, even the environmental analysts were just saying, you should just dig a tunnel through that mountain. It would be like less damageful and it won't be washed down. And to save something like $25 million over the total cost of $600 million, to save like the 25 or 20, I don't remember the number, but to save a little much more money, they just went and just dynamite the side of the mountain, which was also a native territory, which was also the space where it was a really good habitat for a bunch of animal creatures that were living there. So they just went through that, and everybody knows that it's just going to be washed down by mudslides because it's what happened already 5 times with the old highway. So they're just like spending $600 million on that just for fun. And that's just the transportation. Like the sport infrastructure are even better. Okay, let's start with the Nordic Lodge. It's really interesting. Like near Whistler, there's something called the Nordic Lodge Center. That is just this place where they play basically biathlon and cross-country skiing. And there's also a couple of things for like alpine skiing. There's a couple of more things. But when I think about cross-country skiing, I'm always thinking, you know, a sport that doesn't destroy environment. And everybody, you know, that watch it on TV are just like, oh, it's a sport that doesn't destroy environment. Like, what do people are complaining? I just watch it on TV and it's just a guy going across the woods. But the thing is that it's Olympic cross-country skiing. So it doesn't go, like, as easy as that. So the first thing that they had to put in place is stacks. Because for the first time, like, people are going to be watching cross-country skiing and they're going to be going in the woods just to watch cross-country skiing. So, like, you just get stacks for like 5,000 people beside your cross-country skiing trail. But what do you need? You're somebody that pays like more than $100 for watching a competition of cross-country skiing. You at least want to have a beer and a hot dog. You know? It starts there, like. And yeah, so what they have to build is a restaurant. So, like, they just start by building this restaurant there. And they had to pass water line, and they had to pass sewer lines, and they had to pass, you know, the infrastructure is to have a restaurant there. But while having sewer lines, you just as well build a parking lot besides it. Because you're going to have 5,000 people coming there. So what ended up like being for the most non-environmental destructing sport, they just had to chop down 100,000 trees just for the Nordic Lodge Center. For watching people doing biathlon. And after the games, like, just think about watching cross-country skiing. You know, like, it sounds even more boring than curling on TV. Like, it's nonsense. Nobody's gonna pay after that. And it's what I call, like, an infrastructure that's just way too specialized to be useful. And it's just gonna be built, you know, with your public money as we go. And it's just, yeah. Okay. Another thing is the Cypress Mountain Center for like all the snowboarding events. They wanted to have their near Vancouver for I don't know what reason, but they were just like going in the Cypress Mountain, which is just like less than an hour north of Vancouver. So the Cypress Mountain is souther than Whistler. So what happened there is that the IOC was just looking at that and they were just like, oh, you have a contingency plan in case it's not as cold as we expect it to be. And the government of BC just said, no, what do you mean? And they were just like, oh, if it's warm, you know, like your snow cannon are not going to work. You're going to have, you know, to use chemical products, you know, to just increase, you know, the temperature of which the water freezes. So like the government of BC started to stack up on polysiloxane, which is a chemical product that you put in water. And it's amazing because like you can get ice cube at 5 degrees Celsius. But polysiloxane is also used as a pesticide. So if the shit hit the fan and it's warmer than expected, like, they're gonna be using snow cannon to throw fucking pesticides on the top of a mountain. And, yeah. And it's gonna be the greenest game ever, but not on top of the mountain, you know? Like, it's not part of the area that they're watching at. Okay. But, yeah, and, okay, we're just starting, like, okay. So now, like, the tourists are coming, you know, like, it's 2003, like, 2006, like, most of the infrastructure are finished to be built because they want them to have ready on time because they, you know, they always have problem with workers and stuff that go on strike and stuff, but it didn't happen because they imported Mexicans. So like when the tourists started to arrive, like the prices start to increase. And in Vancouver, it's pretty interesting to see how it gone because I lived there in 2004. I just moved there with a bunch of my friends, and we were just like trying to get a house together. And I ended up renting a room for $200. So it was pretty cool at the time, like in 2004. And then I just moved back there in 2009, as I was telling you. Like, I just moved there in June, and I just found a bunch of friends to find a house together. And we were just, like, all willing to pull, like, up to $600, you know, into having a room in a house. So we never found anything. We looked for 3 months, and we all ended up in garage and, like, in renting a van in the backyard of a punk house where 20 people live and things like that. We never found anything for $600. So according to my standard, like, the rent in Vancouver, because there's no, like, public data available on, like, the average rent in Vancouver. So according to my standard, the rent in Vancouver has been multiplied by 3 because I found a room for $200, now I can find a room for $600. So it at least multiplied by 3. So, and it's interesting to look at the real estate market because they have an upkeep cost for their apartment buildings. It costs like, you know, $500, you know, to maintain that house together, and the rent is $1,000. But the thing is that, like, if you got 500, if you multiply the rent by 2, the profit is multiplied by 3. Because there's $500 of upkeep, there's $500, and there's the, you know, the, there's the $100 more that they charge. So they're making 3 times more profit. So that's pretty insane, like, looking at how it gone on a rent level and thinking about how much money the real estate market made more. And it's really important to keep in mind that Vancouver and, that BC, and especially Vancouver, in terms of housing protection, there is none. Like, most of the people that are living in Vancouver right now are under month-to-month agreement with their landlords. I got friends of mine that were, that received a letter, like, on the 1st of November, telling them that their rent, starting on December 1st, will increase by $500. So it's basically an eviction, and basically because they were in a good location and their place were pretty cheap, the landlord just decided I could make so much more money by renting it for, you know, for $500 more, and I'm gonna find like a bunch of people to rent it. And that's just an example. That's not taking into account there is a lot of agreement that has been passed in Vancouver. For example, it's what I call an 11-month rental plan. It starts on July 1st, it ends on June 31st, but it doesn't include the month of February. So you're renting a place, but you know that you have to move your shit out by the beginning of February and move your shit in the beginning of March. So the landlord is just ensuring that the place is going to be rented. But it's sad, but it's the only way of getting something sort of cheap in Vancouver these days, because because, like, if you look on Craigslist for, you know, a house for $3,000, you're going to find houses for $3,000 a day for the Olympics, because that's what the tourists do. There's no more hotels in Vancouver. They're all rented by the IOC people. So that's the way it goes in Vancouver right now. So, and there is, yeah, and the same thing goes along for, like, the poor people, the housing for low-income people. How it goes is that the government of BC, instead of investing in, like, a social housing program where there's a non-profit organization that are managing, you know, the low-income housing, what they did is just, oh, we're going to give a bit more money to welfare, so, like, all the people on welfare going to have the rent given away directly to the landlord. So, like, there is buildings, you know, that were old hotels that were not profitable anymore that just turned into, like, low-income housing because, oh, we're going to get $3.25 a month for a room. And it was in 1997 when they passed the deal. So $3.25 for a room is, like, it's pretty good, especially if you got a hotel that got 100 rooms. So you're just making a ton of money out of welfare, and the government of BC don't have to build social housing because, oh, there's not so much homeless people anymore. But those hotels are still managed by the private sector. And what is the main intent of the private sector? Anybody knows? Yay!
Make profit?
Yay! So when it's not profitable anymore to rent to poor people, what do? You just destroy it and you just put condos instead and you make a ton of money. Because, like, your goal is profit, not helping poor people. So, now we're just, like, paying the price. As I'm talking, there's, like, at least 850 units of low-income housing that has been destroyed just to build other things instead, such as hotels and condos. So, basically, like, because there's no rent protection, the low-income housing was managed by private sector, the private sector is not making any money off that, and it's just, like, pushing people to the streets. And it's, and all those things has been confirmed by also the BC Pivot Legal Society that is doing a homeless census in the downtown core of Vancouver. The downtown core of Vancouver is a small area where most of the homeless people live. It's where most of the service for homeless people, like, needle exchange, soup kitchen, it's like where all those things are. So, in the downtown core of Vancouver, the census for 2002, which is a year before, In 2002, the year before the bid got accepted, there were 600 people that were homeless in the downtown core. But in 2008, which is the last data available, there were 3,000 people that were homeless in the downtown core. So when people are going to say that we're violent because, you know, there's going to be a window broken, like during the games, it's not taking into account that people's houses got completely destroyed. You know, those people just lost their houses. So, yeah. So that's, yeah, we're not so, I think that those people are angry and there is a good reason for this. But it's, the worst thing about that is that currently we're just like starting to understand what goes on in Vancouver, because there is a bunch of laws that I'm going to be covering later on that are just pushing the homeless people outside of the downtown core, because sleeping in the street is now became illegal. So as I'm talking, I know like reports from the city of Chilliwack, which is just the suburbs, like that is two hours away from maybe an hour and a half away from Vancouver, has seen its homeless population quadruple, like recently, like in the last 3 years. So, and there's like, when I was hiking in Kelowna in 2004, I was just like asked, you know, like, hey man, do you want some crack? And I was just like, what the fuck? And I was just like hiking in Kelowna, and people were just telling me, oh yeah, as the summer came, like a lot of people, you know, a lot of homeless people from Vancouver just hitchhiked, you know, outside of the city because it was harsh and the police were aggressive against them. So, because there's too much repression in Vancouver, the homeless population is moving to like all those other towns where there is no service for homeless people. And we just know that, you know, during the bid period, there's been an increase in the homelessness of 373% in downtown Vancouver. And that's not including all the other areas of BC, because all the people have been pushed over in areas where they can't take care of them, you know, where the services are not in place to take care of them, you know? So the social consequences and the long-term health consequences over the homeless population are still to be seen. And we know that there's going to be at least 3,000 people that are going to be having a night in the rain. But hold on. But that's just the beginning, because when I was hiking in Kelowna, it was 2004. And in October 2004, they passed the Safe Street Act, which is the equivalent of the Safe Street Act that happened in Toronto. It's basically illegalizing the fact of panhandling. It's illegalizing the fact of sleeping in the street, drinking in public, and a bunch of those things, jaywalking. And it's just like create more laws that are basically only applied in downtown Vancouver's. In downtown Vancouver, all those laws are just being applied right now. And it's just like, but as they go, like the government just realized, oh, but there's more and more people that are still homeless in the downtown core. So in 2006, the mayor, Sam Sullivan, just created a law that, as he says, it will reduce by 50% the number of drunken fighting, homeless people, panhandling, and all those things, you know, by 2010. So in 2006, they just created a new police force that's patrolling downtown to ensure that the homeless people are following the Safe Street Act. And the project was called Project Civil City. And and they just aimed to remove, you know, the homeless people for 2010. You know, they don't want to solve the problem. They don't want to give them jobs. They don't want to do anything. And basically, those people are just like in a situation where they have no place to go because rent is too expensive in Vancouver and in BC in general. So, and that's not taking into account that all those people that are just like, they're losing their home because they can't afford it anymore, they end up in the streets, and now it's illegal to panhandle, and they don't have much, you know, way of getting around. So basically, like, they just get tickets for panhandling, they just end up in jail and learn other criminality because there's nothing better to do to survive in BC those days. So all those people are, you know, there's a lot of social problems that are created in the long term regarding those policies that are just pushing people to the street and taking them to jail so they learn how to do real criminality so they can get money when they live on the street the next time. Which is totally disgusting, in my humble opinion. But it's not all. Like, in 2009, like, the government was still like, oh my god, there's more and more homeless people. Like, it's getting worse every year. What the fuck are we gonna do? But, and what they did is they passed the Emergency Shelter Act, which is the law that just allowed the Vancouver Police Department to take homeless people if there is an emergency weather situation. And hold on, it's funny because they just wanted to be to look nice. So they just if there is an emergency weather situation, and the emergency weather situation in Vancouver is raining for 3 days. Those who are not from BC like probably do that now. I'm gonna explain it to you. It's just that in Vancouver in the winter it rained for 60 days straight. It never fucking stops. Like you get out of your house in the morning and you see that it's not raining, you're just like, oh my god, the cloud is broken. I'm gonna call the repairman. You know, like there's, you know that there's something wrong like when it's not raining, and it's basically raining every day. So like to look nice, they just said that we're gonna take the homeless people. If there's emergency weather, like we're gonna bring them to homeless shelter against their will. But the thing is that like the people that are living in the downtown core are living there for good reason. It is the location of like all the homeless clinics. It's the location of the homeless dental clinic. It's the location of all the needle exchange. It's the location of a lot of groups that are distributing free needles and free condoms for like people that are having addiction issues. So all those people don't have access to this anymore and are just being shit in the suburbs. And we're, because the transit is so bad in Vancouver, we're not gonna see them before a long while. Okay. And as I was saying earlier on, like, it's just a small overview of all the social problems we're creating. We don't know. Like, we just have a small idea of what's going on. But we know that for sure that the prices are continuing to rise because, you know, like, what's the longest time before a show? Have you ever planned to go to, you know, what's the longest time?
Before what?
Before you go to a show, you know, when you buy your ticket and all your stuff and you just like find your place to stay and everything.
Not too long.
You know, most of the people will just like require something right now. And because they have, you know, they are multimillionaire people, they're just going to be willing to find anything at any price and they don't care. I just want to see the Olympics. So the consequences are going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And what's funny in Vancouver, because the Olympics are getting bigger and bigger and they're attracting more and more people. I used to talk about that as gentrification, but it's funny because it's not even gentrification. It's turning the city into a parking lot and just like into a massive attraction park. And basically, the people that are coming in, you know, the equivalent of a small town for the IOC people, probably like 50,000 more tourists than that. It's all those people are just basically getting there for 2 weeks and then they're going away. And we're never going to see them again. So it's not gentrification. It's basically like pure destruction. And the consequences of that on a city are really hard to understand because there's analysis on gentrification. There's analysis on a bunch of things, but not on, you know, pushing everybody out, then just like leaving a humongous hole in the middle of the city and hoping that everything will go well. But from what we know, like after Expo 86, like in Vancouver, people like, the situation was awful, and like the city was just like bankrupt for a while. What we know also is that the government of BC just decided to have all the contracts with the government worker to finish up on March 1st. So like everybody, you know, that have a working contract with the government of BC will just be renegotiating their contract at the same time. And basically, like the government would just say, "I don't have no money," because you won't have any money. So I'm pretty stoked to see what's going to happen after the Olympics. Okay. So yeah. So on the but however, like as we were getting closer and closer to the Olympics, when they started to build the infrastructures, like in Whistler and Vancouver, basically what they were doing because. In BC, there's no treaties between the First Nation that were there in the first place and the government. So, like, all the land that is not occupied by, you know, and even the land that is occupied by white people nowadays is unceded, stolen native land. So, as they were building all those things, there were a lot of resistance that going on to prevent people from like, you know, because when they built an agriculture center, as I was explaining later on, it was on the ground that used to be for harvesting medicinal plants for native people. So the people were just like getting down there and fighting, And as all those things were happening, the repression over activists like all over the place just started to be bigger and bigger, because the people in the downtown core were just saying no Olympics. You know, they were just like against the Olympics, and the native people were just like also fighting against the Olympics. Then So as there were like a big unity between the numerous scenes in Vancouver, the repression got worse and worse and worse. So it led to the death of Harriet Nahini. I don't know if anybody's like heard about her. Yeah. Okay. So I'm not gonna go into that. I'm not understanding the issues very well. Anyway. But the repression is still going on. Like there is a lot of things that are happening currently in Vancouver. First off, they put together two units as I was getting the card away. There is the Vancouver 2010 Integrated Security Unit, and there is the Joint Intelligence Group. The Joint Intelligence Group is just coming to my conferences, riding around in rental Lincoln, and just, eating in fancy restaurants as they follow me around as I try to hitchhike outside of cities in fucking snowstorms. And they're just saying that we're following you. They should fucking pick me up. as I was saying, like when they arrested me, like in Hamilton, like it was sort of funny because they were telling me, I was with you in Kingston, I was with you like when you were in Sherbrooke, I was with you when you were in Montreal, I was with you when you were in Quebec City. And they're just like talking to me and just like, you know, exposing the fact that they are, you know, that they are following me, and they are. So there is a lot of intelligence going on. That's why I'm giving the legal disclosure first, because I'm pretty sure there's somebody here that's from them. There is a lot of repression that happened over the Olympic Resistance Network group, which I'm part of, because the Visu unit were just visiting people not only at their house, but they were visiting people at their parents' place, they were visiting people at their job, they were visiting people on transit, they were just like following people around and just arresting them, you know, wherever they wanted. And it's basically been really bad in Vancouver. A lot of organizers like just went away because like it's, you know, it's too fucking stressful. And a lot of people in Vancouver are really afraid to expose the fact that they're against the Olympics anymore, because like it's just, it attracts you so much heat. And and there is a cease and desist letter that has been sent to the Vancouver Integrated 2010 Security Unit from activists to stop the harassment over activists, because you know, like, stop visiting my mom and tell her I'm doing bad things. I'm not doing bad things. I don't know, like, I could go into a million examples, but just like when I was in Sherbrooke, which is a town the size of Kingston that only speak French, basically, they had visited five different people there for organizing against the gangs. Those people will go to Vancouver and they won't be able to speak English. They won't be able to survive 3 days because they can't order a pizza slice. You know, and they visited five of them, you know, and just told them that we know that you're planning things against the Olympics. We're going to stop you if you try. But they can't. Please. Anyway, so, yeah. And it's not taking into account, like, you know, all the surveillance that has been installed in Vancouver. There is a lot of infrastructure that are being put in place that's going to stay after the Olympics. For example, all the city buses now have three security camera powered buses. So, if you take transit, you're being watched. And now on most street corners of the big streets in Vancouver, there is security cameras that are just watching people there. And it's not, you know, it's not especially for the Olympics. It's just, you know, the RCMP is doing their thing. And, you know, like, because the RCMP has to ensure the security of the games, we're never going to know what part of which planet was. It's really hard to get the data, like, of, you know, why it is happening, because we know that for sure that they're putting together like 400 new security cameras around the venues now, because they're getting there. So basically like it's a panopticon. Like you walk in Vancouver and they pretty much like can follow you from one camera to the other all the way to where you're going. And that's not taking into account also. Now they just passed a bylaw that because like they told 7 years ago that there would be no protest or events during the games. So what they did, they just passed a law that just restrict people from using uncelebratory signs. So which means that if you're on an Olympic corridor and you have a sign that says "I'm against the Olympics," you can be fined with $2,000 fines. But if you're saying, I love the Olympics on your sign, you're okay. And it's being funny because the city of Vancouver has put this bylaw together by itself and it just like push it through. And as I'm speaking, they're trying to remove some of the concept, you know, they try to reduce the fine a little. Anyway, because there have been a lawsuit that's been intended in court against the city of Vancouver because it's against the Charter of Rights and Freedom to prevent people, you know, from saying to people what they should write on their signs. So, it's been charter challenged, and as it is, like, the city of Vancouver is trying to remove some of the more offensive things. I think they would allow a couple of more things now, but it's still illegal to have a megaphone. It's still illegal to have all those things. And the city is trying to look like they're withdrawing this bylaw, but it's still not done. And, basically, like, we are all going to be fined with like $2,000 fines for having signs when the demonstrations are going to be going on because they're already demonstration planned. But the thing is that the time that the charter challenge go all the way through, it's going to take 4 years before the law is found unconstitutional. So we're going to have to pay those tickets in the meantime that the law is getting found unconstitutional. And as the bylaw says, like... It turn illegal adding sign, noise, disturbance, or nuisance that might interfere with the success of the game or the enjoyment of entertainment on city land. So if you were preventing enjoyment on the city land, you can be fined with $2,000. If your digestive tube is emitting odors that are, you know, considered, you know, that is breaking the enjoyment of the game, they can seize it. You know? And this is what democracy looks like in Vancouver at the moment. And they're just saying to us, like, that it's going to be good for the economy. But the thing is that, like, as I told you earlier, the government of Canada and BC are just putting the infrastructure in place so it make it possible to have games. And the VanOck is selling the tickets and, you know, all the stuff. Like, VanOck is probably going to make money, you know, after, like, the government of BC committed to give it more money as we were going there. But all in all, like, the new analysis has been released, and they just say that in the most optimistic scenario, you know, for the $6 billion invested, and that does not include, like, all the latest data for security, as the $6 million invested in the last 7 years, they should bring, in the most optimistic scenario, in the next 7 years, they should bring $4 billion in economic benefit, which means that they invested $6 billion to get $4 billion. In other terms, like, they just thrown in the mud, you know, like, there's going to be a 62% return back on investment. So it's a really, really bad investment. And, and that's not taking into account that we don't know the price for security. And that's the best optimistic scenario. So this game can totally be under, like, 50%, you know, economic benefits. And that's including that they're going to rent the, you know, the stadiums that they are building to, like, bad soccer team and things like that, and just like happened in Montreal. Anyway, and as the specter of the crisis, like, it's showing its span, like, over the governments, they're just like baiting out GM, they're baiting out all those big enterprises. And I really think that the Olympics, because, like, they're just giving away $6 billion to get $4 billion, the thing is that they're just investing all those money into the real estate sector, and it's just as bad as bailing out GM. You know, economically speaking, it's just as bad. So all I can say is that they're going to try to pass us the Olympic-sized bid for all those things, and I just hope that as the Olympic flame goes by, you would just grab it and ignite the flame of resistance with it instead, because if they can continue to pass us those kind of bills, we're going to have a dark and bleak future. Thanks. Question for you. Anybody have questions?
How's your response been on the tour?
The response has been fucking amazing. Like, a lot of people... through, like, I was just like, I couldn't even make music afterward because people were just like, okay, how do we block the torch here? And it's just like, okay, this is like, do your meeting, and I'm not going to intervene in there because I just think it's awesome. And yeah, everywhere I went, like even in cities like Drummondville, there were like, 10 people that were just like, okay, what do we do for the torch? We need to make leaflets, we need to need banner and things like that. So like, it's been really fun time. Like everybody is just like, oh, I didn't thought that it was that bad. Because it's really, as I said, it's really hard to understand what are the consequences of the games. More questions. Eric!
I want to know what you're expecting, like, having been in Vancouver for a few years now, what are you expecting during the Olympics? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
It's really hard, like, I don't know, like, there's no fucking way, like, we can know what will be going on, you know, like, in Quebec City, the organizers were just like having this first demonstration where there were 500 people, and then because on TV, like, everybody just saw the wall falling, everybody just took the street the day after. And, you know, we never know. It all depends on you. I basically, like, if there's people showing up out of nowhere, like, it's gonna be fucking awesome. But, we just don't know, like, mobilizing, you know, you just give away leaflets to people and you just hope that they're gonna read them. But sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. And, yeah. We're going to see as we go. There's no way we can know, like, if we're going to have 5,000 people or 500 people. We're just giving away leaflets as much as we can, trying to not to think about our healthcare or other things like that. Other questions?
He agrees with you.
What's your take on, like, how the messaging of the resistance has kind of penetrated the kind of more dominant narrative?
It's hard to say. I've seen a lot of situations where the mass media has been agreeing a lot with the protesters. But I don't think it went that far. Like, I don't think it went far enough. Because it's important, like, it's not only important to understand that there is, you know, basically the message that is getting across is that those Olympic Games are mismanaged and they're gonna cost us a lot of money because of that. But the message that should be, like, no Olympic Games has, you know, given any money to any organizing cities, and who are the companies responsible, you know, and who's the real estate, you know, businesses that are pushing money through big corporations to ensure that they're going to make money in the last 10 years. You know, those are the information, and, you know, like, those should be, like, the information that are given in media. I think the media is saying that the Olympics, like, are going to go bankrupt or shit, which is truly the case. It's fucking basic fact. Like, you just look at it and it's obvious. So the media are, you know, they're never going to be left-wing enough for me, I guess. But I think it's helpful, but at the same time, it just encourages apathy because, like, oh, the games are coming anyway, whatever, like, it's gonna go broke, and we just, like, fucking failed, and people are just like, whatever, like, we failed, and that sucks, we're never gonna try again because it's been boring, you know?
What's the most surprising thing you've seen, good or bad?
One thing that has been awesome is that we ended up, like, as a subcommittee of the Olympic Resistance Network, there were the Teaching 2010 Resistance, which is just a bunch of kids that are just going into, we just put together a workshop to go into a high school just to inform the kids there, you know, like, oh, you're going to be paying the taxes for the next 25 years. You should probably know what your money is spent on. And we just, like, been going into high schools, and we just put a workshop together. We had humongous positive response amongst the teacher because basically, funding cuts in education. There's a program of like $500,000 that has been put together by the government of BC to encourage the Olympic spirit in the classrooms. So like the teacher like has just gone like, no. Like, and basically like the teacher now don't fucking care about inviting hippies, you know, that are just putting Nicorette patches over their cab. their ACAB tattoos and are just going into the classroom just to tell are just going into the classroom to tell them, you know, what are going to be the consequences of the Olympics. And so, like, it's been really awesome. I've been, like, into, like, 6 different classrooms, and it's been fun.
Is the only reason you got permission to do that because the teachers were pissed off at the...
It's a big part, and it's a large outreach effort. Like, it's an ongoing effort, you know? Like, if you know a couple of teachers that are radicals and you just know where to hang out, you know, you can find more. And it's a humongous outreach effort, but the effort is put together by people that are, you know, not only Olympic resistors and basically, like, the people that are Olympic resistors, when there's going to be something else, there's going to be against something else, you know? So it's anti-war people, it's, you know, anarchist people, and it's a lot of people from, like, a vast variety of places that are putting this together. So, yeah, it's just creating an outreach, you know, and it just creates hope. Like, if, you know, the anti-war people have all those contacts of radical teacher, and you can just go around every year just teaching those kids, you know, like, what is the problem with, you know, the Canadian government, what are we doing in Afghanistan, and, you know, all those things. It's really interesting, and it just it gave me a bit of hope for Vancouver that is probably... Anyway, there's not much. Vancouver needs a little bit of hope. It doesn't have much, but the little bit it can take, you know, it's already that done. More questions? Yeah?
Can you talk a little bit about the infrastructure that you guys have set up for the convergence?
Yep.
That you're willing to talk about, anyways?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to pay for my lawyer and stuff?
Yeah, for sure, like, we got Medic set up and all together, like, for Victoria, for example, we're adding something like 12 Medics just for Victoria. It's going to be way bigger for, like, the convergence, and we're, like, adding a much more, there's much more thing coming together, a lot more training that's going on. There is, we got the money and we got the, we almost got the spaces signed and shit, but we can't say where it's gonna be. But we got a conversion space, we got a medic space, we're gonna have, like, cooking space, there's gonna be free food. There's 2 days of, I don't know if you've seen the Olympic convergence leaflet, but, we're talking about 2 days of conferences. We already got, Howardson, confirmed. Is it Howardson or the other guy? Like, oh fuck, no! I didn't promise anything. I didn't promise anything. I just say there's gonna be like a bunch of big name at the Olympic convergence. There's at least like one demo that is called like family friendly, but there's gonna be more things that are being put together right now. You know, at least a couple of demo under the diversity of tactics. For those who are interested in that kind of things. Things are going to be together. There's a billeting system that is already online on olympicresistance.net. So if you have a bunch of friends getting together and just like wanting to find a place to stay and are not into couch surfing because you're bringing too much object that might or might not be associated with illegal activities, you know, you can find, you know, hosting via the billeting form.
You guys think that billeting system is going to be safe?
Yeah, it's going to be safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any more questions? Yay.
Do you have any information on where they're housing all the RCMP and all the cops, like all the private security and everyone that's coming into Vancouver? Because last I heard was the cruise ship kind of fell through.
I don't know. I got I didn't dig information, and I haven't read the news like in years. In a month, but it seems like years because I've been on the road sleeping in dishes for like months. Anyway, more questions. Okay, so I'm going to be back playing shitty music afterward. You can give donations in there, like, as an advance kind of payment system. It would be appreciated. I'm pretty low on cash at the moment. But, yeah, so donation jar. I'm going to go out for a smoke, then I'm going to play you music. Is it cool with everybody?
Yeah.
Yay. Thanks a lot for showing up. It's been awesome.